Good morning. You have tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week on Friday, April 11th. This is 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. My name is Jack Peterson. I'm here, as usual, with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Beautiful sunny day here in Sandpoint.
Yeah, sure is. Uh-huh. We're getting some really nice spring weather right now.
Yes, I'm
things are starting to bud out, starting to turn a little green out there.
It's getting very green. Yes, I think we even had some flowers, some daffodils yesterday that were then picked later on.
I was at a friend's house on Sunday, and he had a really great crop of daffodils growing.
it's that time of year. Hey, we're here with two reporters from the Sandpoint Reader. Senior writer Sansaray Mitchell joins us this morning, as well as the editor-in-chief, Zach Hagedon, to talk about a rather busy week in news. Of course, across the nation, it has been a busy week in news, and I'll start our little news wrap-up at the state level. The Idaho legislature did adjourn for the session after 89 days on Friday, the most legislation was prepared in the last 5 years. Let me rephrase that. More legislation prepared during this session than had been prepared at any time in any of the last five sessions. Over 1,000 bills were prepared for this legislative session, which lasted for 12 weeks, went 2 weeks past its target. Tax cuts dominated the legislature, as well as a number of impactful bills. We're going to have to hear from our own state legislators about that, I think, in a future edition of either this show or the Wednesday morning show.
On Wednesday, we are intending to have interviews with all three of our legislators, although I've only heard back so far from Jim Woodward, so I need to confirm those interviews with Cornell Razor and Mark Sauter. But tune in to the Wednesday show, and we'll hear a wrap-up from the legislators.
Perfect. And I know that KRFY plans to broadcast on Saturday, May 3rd, from the legislative town hall that's going to be taking place at Sandpoint Community Hall over on First Avenue. That will be, I can't remember what time of day that is, but we'll be there talking to or listening into the conversation between Jim Woodward, Mark Sauter, and their constituents at Sandpoint Community Hall. Some county news in Bonner County here. At Wednesday's Bonner County EMS fee increase hearing, county commissioners voted to raise the price for public services by 15% and to institute a non-resident fee per service. This is the first fee increase since 2020, and since 2020, EMS call volume has increased by 20%, and operating costs have grown significantly. This does make up the billing revenue for almost 40% of the EMS budget, so it was agreed by the district board that fee increases would be coming. So 15% increase, as well as a non-resident fee implemented. At the courthouse, the Sandpoint woman who was accused of setting fire to the Army Surplus One store on the 4th of July last year has changed her plea from not guilty to guilty of second-degree arson, and she will face sentencing on June 16th. A mental health evaluation of the defendant was ordered by the judge. Here in the city of Sandpoint, parking concerns continue to dominate the local public discourse and city council. A new development proposed at 413 Church Street has drawn some criticism over a parking requirement exemption, and we'll be talking about the details of that in just a moment, I'm sure, with Zach Hagedon, who wrote the big piece leading off this week's Reader. And in both national and local news, hundreds of demonstrators, at least 750, some estimates ranging up to 1,000, filled downtown Sandpoint on Saturday, April 5th. That was part of a national day of protest that saw large demonstrations in all 50 states and the nation's capital. And Sansaray Mitchell, you were there.
I was.
The Sandpoint Reader. Let's talk about it a little bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. Dive right into it. Well, okay. Why were hundreds of people coming out? Why did hundreds of people come out and fill the streets of downtown Sandpoint on Saturday, April 5th?
Yeah, it would be easier to ask why people weren't protesting. Mm-hmm. People were protesting pretty much everything that the Trump administration has done recently, mostly all of the federal funding cuts and layoffs to the National Park Service, the Department of Education, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There were signs that advertised, you know, LGBTQ rights, veterans services. They're just across the board. And then the majority of the other signs, the sort of anti-signs, were anti-Trump, anti-Elon Musk, a lot of them comparing them to Hitler, calling it the Fourth Reich. There were a lot of little Nazi symbols and swastikas painted across Donald Trump faces. And yeah, so they just showed up in a show of solidarity for about 2 hours, protested pretty much peacefully. There was no issues from the protesters. There were a few pickup trucks whose drivers tried to kind of swerve close to the curbs. One actually hit quite a few protest signs on the way, but no one was injured, and it mostly went off without a hitch.
Any speakers? Any kind of events to it, or was it just 2 hours of a gathering?
It was mostly just 2 hours of gathering. People tried to pick up some chants and do, you know, "We are the people, the mighty, mighty people." Didn't get a lot of traction with that. There was a performance by the Sandpoint Resistance Revival Chorus, which is a group of eight ladies who were singing sort of spiritual protest songs dressed all in white. It was very visually striking. And they passed out little pamphlets with all the lyrics so that everyone could sing along.
Mm-hmm. I did see some photographs, I think, of the gals that dress up like handmaidens.
Yes, yeah. The handmaidens from Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale were there and made several loops around all of the protesters and would very pointedly use the crosswalk whenever there was someone walking by who was, or driving by, who was giving the middle finger to the protesters. So they would slow down traffic in a legal way whenever they could.
Yeah. So the guys that do the rolling smoke came by in the big vehicles where they put out all the diesel smoke. Did that occur?
They weren't big. Not that I saw. I was there for about an hour and a half. So there were 30 minutes where I wasn't there. But most of the trucks that came by were the big pickup trucks, but they weren't spitting diesel like they usually do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there were no like American flag ones coming by. Mm-hmm. They were pretty much all of the ones that I saw that were flipping people off or comically giving the thumbs down were all from Kootenai County, interesting enough.
Interesting.
And all of the thumbs up were from Bonner County. So.
And what would you say the percentage of positive versus negative reactions?
Far, far more positive. In the hour and a half I was there, I saw three thumbs down, four middle fingers, and then two, obviously, people swerving into the crowd, which would be the most extreme. But I found it quite comical to see the thumbs down. I thought that was pretty fun.
You know, we are in a county that voted 2-1 for Trump. So it's kind of interesting that most of the reaction of just the general public going by, you perceived to be positive on that.
Right. And I'll throw in, because I was out of town last week, and I was over at the Washington coast in the San Juan Islands, which, you know, is very heavily Democratic. And on that day, on Saturday, you know, we were driving around. We went to, I think, two different islands, and I saw protests occurring in all those communities in the San Juans, but nowhere near as big as ours. So that's it's interesting to me that, you know, an area of Washington state, you know, itself a blue state and a very blue part of a blue state would have even smaller demonstrations than, you know, Sandpoint in Bonner County, which you would assume is kind of the diametric opposite, you know, politically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So hundreds, did you think the 700, 800 count was fairly accurate?
Yes. They had a peacekeeper there that was actually counting heads. And so their official count was 750. And people were coming and going. So I think overall it was probably a bit bigger than that. The 800 mark makes sense to me.
This was the third kind of related protest in about a couple months here. First one started at the end of, the first one was at the end of March. This is part of that 50-51 national movement. Mm-hmm. This is the biggest one so far?
Yes. The March 4th one, I think, got maybe 150 people. Mm-hmm. And so organizers this time were expecting something very similar, but word spread really quickly, and it was a more massive turnout than anyone ever anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been more news happening since that one, too, you know. And were there anybody that were specifically on the tariff situation, since that's been dominant here the last week?
Yes, there were a lot of anti-tariff signs. Mm-hmm. And Trump loves Putin signs, and no one elected Elon signs.
Mm-hmm. I had to get a laugh out of the cover of the Reader this week. There's a gal holding up a sign that says, "So much wrong, so little cardboard." Right. So, yeah, there was a variety of complaints there, from what I observed.
Any protests? I guess this was the third one that was scheduled, and I didn't see a date listed for a fourth. But,
not yet, but I know that on the national level, there is one in the works.
Yeah.
They had one. The first one was actually in February, so they did February, March, April. So I assume they'll try and hit May.
Right, and the weather continues to improve, which makes it easier for people to get out. And, yeah, could be an interesting summer. Hey, is it time now to talk once again about city parking situation developments here?
It's always time to talk about parking in the city, apparently.
It's the year of parking.
Well, I was telling you the other day, I was embarrassed because in my year in preview that we did in January, I said the word of the year at City Hall was going to be water, but I was very wrong.
So
the word of the year was parking.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a... I think sometimes about my family from outside of the city of Sandpoint, who sometimes tunes in to KRFY to hear what's going on, and how much we're talking about parking these days. They must think how busy, how much has changed in Sandpoint that parking is now such a major concern. Right. But yeah, okay. Anyway, the new issue. This is not exactly, this is related, but not exactly the same as the city parking that we were talking about last time. This is not, we're not talking about the city lot. Now we're talking about a new proposed building and the exemption from the parking requirement that that is drawing criticism this time. Where's the building? How much parking would they have been required to have? And are they eliminating? It looks like they're proposing to have no parking whatsoever.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's on Church Street, sort of like right in the middle of the block there. And it's 48 apartment units, all very small, either one bedroom or studios. A little bit of commercial space on the bottom, on the street level facing church.
Mm-hmm.
The footprint of the building itself is only about something 5,000 square feet. And anything above 15,000, I think it was, has to go through a conditional use permit process, which means it goes to the Planning Zoning Commission, potentially goes to the council. So this one is small enough in the footprint anyway that it's not going to have to go before any other bodies. It's going to be an administrative decision within City Hall to approve or, you know, have amendments to it or whatever. But it is four stories tall. So, I mean, it's a substantial building. It just doesn't cover a lot of ground. And there's no parking requirement in that downtown zone, and there hasn't been one for about 10 years. So the city decided a little bit more than 10 years ago to eliminate the parking requirements in that downtown area so as not to sort of like put a hurdle in front of downtown redevelopment. If somebody wants to open up a retail shop or something, they lifted that requirement that, you know, your store has to have X amount of parking spaces to make it easier. And the city points to, you know, a lot of other sort of downtown institutions that have benefited from this, you know, such as like McDuff's, Joel's, you know, a lot of other places that, you know, have pretty substantial business operations, but aren't required to have a commensurate number of parking spaces, which helps them sort of keep their costs down, et cetera. So this building falls under that sort of broad code exemption. And a lot of folks who receive notices, maybe neighbors, you know, people within sort of 300 feet of the proposed location, got notices saying this was going to happen, and they picked up almost immediately on the no parking component of the proposal, and that made it out onto social media, and people, of course, were, you know, angered on social media. So I went and, you know, checked out the comments that are posted on the city's website, and as of the press time when I wrote the story, there was like 17 or something, 16 comments. Every one of them was very much opposed, and the lack of parking being required was like the central concern. So I went and spoke, you know, with the mayor, and he explained to me that, you know, the parking exemption portion of code was intended to create sort of downtown vibrancy and all this. It also sort of echoed some of the material that was in the application, saying that there's a lot of street parking in Sandpoint that goes unused. So the assumption being that, you know, people are going to rent apartments in this place, and they're just going to find a space on the street somewhere because there's plenty of spaces available. That's the argument that, you know, the city makes, and also that the developer makes in their application narrative. A lot of people were like, yeah, right. that's not realistic. The surrounding businesses are going to be cramped, you know, for their customers, for their workers. There's one nearby office building where one of the representatives from that submitted a comment saying, like, we have a parking lot that's across the alley from the back of this building, and we just know it's going to be full of these tenants parking in our parking lot all the time, and we're going to have to tow them or have to put up a fence. So a lot of the commentary from the residents was like, yeah, I mean, you can say all you want that there's plenty of parking spaces available throughout town for these residents, but the reality is they're going to park as close as they possibly can to where they live, which is, you know, reasonable. And it's going to push out everybody who has to use those spaces for work or for their customers. The upshot to all that is that, you know, this isn't going to go before P&Z, but at the next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, which is on April 15th, next Tuesday, they will talk about the parking management plan, a new draft of which is coming forward. And at the same time, they're going to talk about a proposed amendment to code, which would sort of alter this parking exemption thing. So I think that there is a recognition at City Hall that maybe this is a, you know, bit of a loophole, or maybe that the exemption has outlasted its use. Because at the time it was put in place, there was a huge level of vacancy for downtown, and we don't have that level of vacancy anymore for storefronts. So the code amendment that they're going to talk about on the 15th is to basically say, okay, you can build residential within this parking exempt zone, and presumably commercial. You either have to provide on-site parking or some kind of parking of your own, or you pay the in-lieu fee. So as a way to sort of generate income out of that. So as people are angered by this particular project and its use of that exemption, so as that's happening, the city's also apparently looking to kind of tighten that piece of code so that we don't see something like this again, maybe. In the meantime, you know, of course, the code stands as it is. And when asked, you know, how does this fit in with the larger strategy for parking downtown, Mayor Grimm told me, he's like, well, we know that we have to do a bunch of stuff to improve our parking, you know, the resurfacing the city lot, you know, getting paid parking instituted at some of these city-owned properties. But also, longer term, we need to build a parking garage, or at least we want to, on presumably the site of the city parking lot today. But in order to do that, we have to demonstrate that there is demand downtown and that the use of parking can generate enough revenue to justify building that structure. So in a sense, by continuing to allow the exemption and to continue to allow development to occur downtown and not have parking, you sort of manufacture stress on the parking system, which can then be leveraged into paid parking and parking passes, you know, for residents, et cetera, that generates revenue that then can be used to justify a bond to pay for the bigger parking garage down the line. So there may well be a little bit of strategy involved in continuing to allow exemptions to occur for development and then kind of force people into buying passes, like resident downtown parking passes. That would generate, I think what the mayor told me, was like $1,600 a month in parking revenue if all those if even 40 of those residents buy downtown parking passes. So they can park wherever they want, you know, on the city streets. So there's a lot of moving parts to it, and it all sort of seems to lead back to who's parking where and how much money we're going to make out of it.
Yeah. Excuse me. Well, they're in the midst, as you mentioned, of developing this parking master plan. So it's kind of timely in a way that this came up at a point where that plan's in development, and maybe that plan can address this. Because as it currently is proposed or exists, the people that live in the downtown can buy these parking passes,
right,
and then park all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Along the street, as I understand it.
Right.
So if that happens here, and I'll confess, mm-hmm, my office is two doors down on Church Street
right,
from this, mm-hmm, and I took a count, there's actually 19 street parking spaces along Church Street on that block.
Mm-hmm.
There's no parking on Fifth. There's mm-hmm no parking on Pine behind the development. So I think it's reasonable to assume that 50 plus cars looking for parking are going to take up all 19 of those, yeah, spots with vehicles that might sit there all day long if there's no regulation on it.
Or they're going to be in the city parking lot.
Or in the city, mm-hmm, yeah, the city parking lot.
They'll be paying for that.
Well, they will, but they'll actually probably go to the two unpaid lots that are, mm-hmm, along the bike path across Fifth.
Right.
I would imagine most of them will go there. But then there, if you take a look at those lots, there's a lot of people that park in those lots right now, so they're going to be squeezed out to park somewhere else. So mm-hmm, yeah, it all goes down to parking on this particular development.
It's like a giant game of Tetris.
Yeah. Okay, so the development it was brought forward by OZ Sandpoint QOZB LLC from Linden, Utah. Do we know anything about these developers? I mean, do they have a history in town? Do you know anything about the owners who are proposing to put up this building?
No, I haven't really done any mm-hmm digging into them.
I took a look, and they have done a number of developments in different cities, but I don't know if they've done that.
I've never heard that name here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we've seen in previous developments, you know, you can have any kind of name you want, and
yeah, you don't know who's behind it.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, we had that one down here on Bridge Street, right? Mm-hmm. It was a company that was based in Maryland and had a street address in like California and mailing address in Virginia. It was like, oh my God, who is this? So you never know.
Yeah. This would be if this is proposed and constructed, this would be the largest residential building in downtown.
It'd be about 47 feet tall is what the application states.
And 48 one bedroom and studio apartment units. I don't know even what would come in second place as far as in what we consider kind of the downtown core. I guess if you consider the Seasons part of it, that's a larger complex, but that's sure, that's outside of the real, you know, the traffic pattern that dominates our downtown.
And they do have
parking, and they have dedicated parking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. But you know, I will say that, you know, despite the fact that all the comments that I saw were against the development for the parking mm-hmm reason, a lot of people were like, yeah, I mean, we loved the idea of having residential downtown. So I don't think anyone's like angered particularly by having apartments or any kind of residential downtown. I think mm-hmm I think a lot of people are like, yeah, great. And like, let's get people living down there. Mm-hmm. And apartments presumably would be more affordable. So these could be accessible to people.
That's the plus side of it. They're really small. So they're presumably going to be workforce housing for people that are working right in the downtown. And there probably will be some people that live there that don't have cars, but very mm-hmm few, because we live in a place where you kind of have to have a car to go out mm-hmm and do anything.
And that is one of the arguments also in favor of the parking exemption, by not requiring the developers to invest in X amount of parking spaces. You would hope in the best case scenario that they could take that savings and then reduce the cost of renting.
Yeah.
So, but I guess we'll see. I mean, if it actually comes to pass that this is developed, I mean, we don't know what it's actually going to look like at the end.
This is just from my memory here. You can't park overnight on downtown city streets, can you? Or isn't there a sign that says no parking 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. or something? Maybe that's wintertime only.
Yeah, I'm not real clear on that, but I think there is a residential pass you can buy that does allow you to do that.
It costs something like $300.
That's right.
It's a couple $100. I forget exactly what it was. And that number has changed a couple times throughout the process of the parking management plan.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, specifically people that live in the downtown.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's certainly possible. I know I have lived in a studio apartment with on-street parking in a mixed-use residential and business area, and it's possible to do that and go out and shuffle your car around every once in a while and get it towed only once by the Minneapolis Street Department on a snowy day.
And did that show you?
Yeah. And that and it immediately wiped out my savings on not having a parking pass by having to pay for towing. But I mean, this would be a change to downtown if this building comes in. I think that's safe to say. This would be a new kind of chapter in the development of downtown, which until now has seen very little residential development at all, and it's almost entirely businesses or people seasonally.
As I remember when they instituted the exemption, I don't know, 15 years or so ago, and we were seeing a lot of vacancies in the downtown. Yeah. That really was part of a philosophy that if we had some people living in the downtown, they would inject some vitality. Mm-hmm. But the idea was that there'd be commercial with just a bit of residential on top, and this is an entirely residential development. So I think that is kind of a loophole, as you mentioned, that the city needs to address. Because if we had a whole bunch of these that were built in the downtown, there would be some real serious parking here issues. Right. Mm-hmm.
Do they have a plan to keep Airbnbs and VRBOs out of it? Mm.
That hasn't really come into the parking management plan that I've seen.
No.
Because this development, I mean, what's going to happen, in my opinion, is, as the child of a real estate agent, is that it's going to be bought by the wealthy, and then it's going to be rented out for short-term rentals in the summertime, and then they can rake in a killing, and then they'll have a longer-term tenant in the winter that they then kick out, which is what most people do. And I love the idea of affordable housing, especially for younger people moving back into town. But I mean, a few months ago, I was looking at a basement, basically a studio apartment in Ponderay, and it was $900 a month. So I don't think there's any way that these are going to be affordable, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't even know what affordability is in this town. Like, every time it comes up, you know, there's a challenge to define it.
It will be very affordable for people buying their fourth or fifth house.
Sorry, does not have any cynicism about this.
Well, as I understand, this is an apartment, not a condo. So
they are apartments, as far as I could tell.
So they won't be privately owned, and I don't know if somebody could sublet an apartment for Airbnb. Right. I mean,
they do. They do that quite frequently. Right. Yeah, some people have upwards of a couple hundred that they sublet across the nation.
And we've seen other developments sort of start out as, you know, short-term rental and then get condoized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that can happen. I mean, even though it starts out as an apartment building, there are ways to turn it into a bunch of condos.
Mm-hmm. It's 8:30. I'm trying to, I guess we better get out of here. We'll watch this, but, as far as where the development is in its in kind of the process, they own the land already. They're going to build something there. Something's going to go in there, and it's probably going to be that looks, you know, the rendering looks pretty official. I mean, this is what we expect to be built here, and now it's a matter of determining whether the parking works or not.
Well, it's going to be it's an administrative decision, so it's not going to P&Z.
It's not subject to the conditional use permit.
No, the footprint's too small, so we may not see this again.
Yeah,
until
they start construction.
It's been finalized, sort of, and the city does have its internal process where the stage that it's at right now is all the application materials have been put in. There's a site plan. There's they've done all sort of like the paperwork, and it's being reviewed. I mean, it's public comment is being gathered online, and it'll be reviewed, and there'll be conditions. Maybe there'll be little tweaks that the city wants, and then once everything's agreed to, then you'll start seeing the sort of the process of construction and the appearance. I mean, these renderings, they always look really nice, but as has been stressed over and over again with other developments in town over the years, like these are cartoons.
Yeah,
that's just what they came up with to sort of like indicate what they were thinking. So
elements
can change. I mean, a lot of things can change, but one thing that isn't going to change is the parking issue, because it still remains within that exempt zone.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. I guess it's the word of the year, as you kind of said earlier, because I think, Santre, you mentioned, like, I think in previous years, a year ago, we would have been looking at this and talking about, like low-income housing and how, mm-hmm. you know, how the actual residence is going to be used. This year, we're talking about where are they going to park, because mm-hmm. that's what's everybody's thinking about mm-hmm. in 2025 in Sandpoint. Well, here we are. It's 8:30, and I guess it's time to wrap up the show. Santre, last time you were here, we talked about the public health district, and just for our listeners who always tune in when Santre Mitchell is on the show and want to know what's going on there, basically no new developments since that meeting in February where they announced the possible creation of a subcommittee to look I can't remember the title of the subcommittee they proposed, but basically kind of a vaccine awareness sort of subcommittee.
The term they were using was informed consent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they were supposed to talk about it at the last monthly meeting. They had a lot of people show up again, but they just kind of skirted the issue. There was mm-hmm. a lot of public comments on it still, but they said that they are going to form that subcommittee. There just doesn't seem to be any movement on it as of yet.
Okay. Well, it's Friday, April 11th, and that's the news of the week, I think. Zach Hagedon, Santre Mitchell, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Wonderful paper this week. Anything else you want to mention before we sign off?
What's coming up next week? You got anything in the hopper?
Starts with P, ends with arcing. there will be coverage of the April 15th P&Z meeting, which will be about
where parking will be discussed. Yes.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio.